Slim margins and competition from big box stores and the internet have been making things increasingly difficult for the traditional bookselling business. And then there was the news last year that the huge national chain Borders is struggling and was considering putting itself up for sale. That got us wondering just how well independent bookstores are faring. And joining me now are Jonathan Friedman, media columnist for MarketWatch, Chris Dublin, who is owner and founder of Book Culture on West 112th Street in Manhattan and a founding member of the Independent Booksellers of New York City, and Henry Zook, co-owner of Book Court on Court Street in Brooklyn. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Jonathan, is Borders still struggling, or have they righted themselves?
It's anybody's guess right now. You can't say it's doing well in this kind of a climate. I was saying before that newspapers and magazines are in the same boat as books. Anything in print right now looks like an endangered species, unless they can use technology to help them somehow.
So is the problem that that people aren't reading as much, or that the economy is bad, or are they facing the same kinds of competition that independent bookstores are facing with the giant Barnes & Noble and Amazon.com?
Well, they're facing similar problems in the economy. Of course, people aren't spending as much money on things like books. But even more deeply, people want things for free, and they want them easier. The Kindle machine is taking over the buzz right now in publishing, obviously, because it's electronic, it's hip, it's small, and it's like the iPod took over music for the same kind of system.
But I see a lot of people with iPods on the subway. I don't see too many Kindles. Henry, do people come into your store and say, I want to get something for my Kindle?
No, not at all. In fact, we don't sell anything related to it.
Well, the Kindle-ach, maybe?
Well, my son and I were going to a publishing meeting in Manhattan a week ago, and he said, Dad, look at everyone on the subway. They're all reading. Do you see anyone with a Kindle? And it was all books.
But they were reading.
They were.
So were you heartened, or were you upset that they didn't buy those books at your store?
No, I think books are here for a long, long time.
Chris, are you scared of the Kindle?
No, I'm not at all scared of the Kindle yet. I think the Kindle was a big media explosion right now, and I think that for a lot of reasons, the publishing industry, because they're scared, are talking about it, and people are buying it. But I don't see them on the street. I don't see it as taking a whole lot of book sales away from bookstores.
But there have been a number of independent bookstore closings in Manhattan over the last few years. Is that because of dwindling sales or because of rising rents?
I think that some bookstores in New York are doing pretty well. Henry's store and my store, we talk a lot. We were in the IBNYC together. We had lunch the other day. Our stores are doing pretty well. I think there's a number of stores that are doing pretty well. Other stores are struggling. I think the same thing is true in retail all over New York. You know, a lot of people are not spending as much money in a lot of different areas, and bookstores are one place where you're seeing more consolidation.
I'd assume that if rents come down, people will find the business a little more attractive again.
Yeah, good point.
I would agree, yes.
Yeah. And I would assume in Brooklyn Heights, where you are, that a number of stores are struggling to bookstores, I mean stores in general.
Yes, exactly.
Because retail is going through a rough time right now.
Yeah, well, and there's been the real estate, you know, bubble.
How long have you owned Book Court?
It was started by me and my partner in 1981 as a 600-square-foot storefront.
Was the market booming in those days?
Oh, no. It was very quiet. Cobble Hill back then was not a place, you know, young single people moved to from Manhattan. It was quiet, but it was a good neighborhood, full of families and things like that.
So as the neighborhood changed, actually, it helped your business?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and then in the last 10 years, there's been a lot of building in the area and consequently many more people living in the area.
But do you have to, and I want to ask both of you this, do you have to keep that in mind when you're ordering books? Are there certain books that you wouldn't put in the stock and other books that you might stock that the major stores like Barnes & Noble might think twice about?
Well, yes. I mean, a lot of it is my own personal preference. A lot of it is our customers and what their reading habits are. And also, there is a mark between the chain's audiences and ours. You know, certainly we sell a lot of books that they sell and vice versa. We're a little more personal.
My guests are Henry Zook, co-owner of Book Court in Brooklyn, Chris Dublin, am I pronouncing it right?
Absolutely.
Who is the owner and founder of Book Culture and a founding member and board member of the IBNYC, the Independent Booksellers of New York City, and Jonathan Friedman, who's a media columnist for Market Watch. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Chris, you started Labyrinth Books in 1997 at a time when a lot of other people were getting out of the business.
Yeah. Well, I think, as I was saying, there's certain segments of the market, certain neighborhoods where you can still sell a lot of books. And there's been a lot of bookstore closings, but some of us have been able to open in the face of that.
Well, your store is now called Book Culture?
It is.
Yeah. And you're located near Columbia University, so I assume that you have a built-in audience, a certain number of academic books and books that have been assigned to students that
exactly.
You can sell. Do you have some kind of relationship? Do professors call you and say, I'm going to be teaching?
That's exactly what they do. Philip Lopate sends his list to us.
My brother, who's been teaching at Columbia.
Yeah, exactly.
And what do you find? Are you looking over, Jonathan, John?
John.
Are you looking over the statistics? Are you finding that certain kinds of books are selling better these days than others?
Because
there was a time when we thought nonfiction was going to overtake fiction, but I would assume that when times get tough, that escapist fare suddenly becomes more popular.
Yeah, it seems to be. I can't speak authoritatively. These fellows can, being in the business, but it seems anecdotally that's the case. And the book business now is getting so skewed from a corporate point of view, where it's now the 90-10 theory instead of 80-20, where one book will sell so many copies that it'll lift all boats. And of course, the Dan Brown book coming out this fall may be a case of that kind of phenomenon, where his next book on Da Vinci Code is going to be a real huge seller.
Yeah, and that helped by the fact that there's a movie based on another one of his books. But is Dan Brown the kind of writer that people in Cobble Hill and Brooklyn Heights want to read?
Well, certainly, yes. And in
I
fact,
thought they were snobbier than that.
No, they do. I mean, there's a fair
I'm just
amount.
Joking.
Yeah.
I'm sure the Harry Potter books did.
Yeah,
were really
extremely
welcome.
Extremely well. But we will do quite well. I think the first print is, you know, it's 5 or 6 million copies.
See, one of the things that's interesting about a book like that is if you look at the sales of that book before it comes out, it's going to be advertised for prices less than Henry and I can buy it for wholesale, for retail distribution through Amazon, for example.
And Amazon could do that because they have such buying power. They can buy so many copies that.
Well, I think it's also a function of their capital position is so huge that they can do pretty much nonprofit sales for certain things because they get people into the site and they add on sales and so forth. So that's all good for them in their view. But it's interesting that Henry and I can sell books like that in our stores. People will be glad to walk in and pay full price. I think there's a huge part of the market which is serviced in kind of a different way than I just bought the cheapest copy.
Mm. Well, are people at Columbia University buying Dan Brown books?
You know, our store is a little bit unique, and we've always specialized in scholarly and academic titles, titles from university presses. But, yes, we can sell those. And there are other bookstores in that neighborhood that sell lots of trade books.
What I found striking about that book, to continue, is when the press release came out about a month or so ago, it was the first press release of that kind that was so big that it got a really big play in the papers and on the websites right away. All the blogs talking about it immediately. So it showed the star power does mean a lot, obviously, in the book business.
Well, it obviously does when you look at the covers of books. If the name of the author is bigger than the name of the title, you know that star power is an effect there.
Yeah, which is frequently the case these days.
If I were to write a book, I would insist that my name be bigger than the title, just so that people would think that I was a success. Henry and Chris, did you work in bookstores for a while before you opened up your own?
I worked for a large store in Harvard Square in Cambridge for about 6 months back in 1979, and then came to New York and worked in publishing briefly before I opened my own store.
Are the business challenges in bookstores different from they were when you started?
I would say yes. There's a lot more competition. First of all, the cost of doing business is much higher.
And Chris?
Yeah, I think that they're very different. I think when I started another small bookstore across from the university. And, for example, at that point, before the huge explosion of chain stores across the country, you could sell a bestseller in your store in huge quantity and make a lot of profit. And it was sometime along in the mid-'80s when the chain stores exploded, all the profits for the bestsellers left. And that was the beginning of the end of the independent bookstore. So that was very different. But I think that the business intellect of the small bookstore owner now is much further advanced than he used to be. We study things. We read management books. We study our all kinds of, we study our financial sheets and stuff. We're different kind of business people than we used to be.
So yeah. You're carrying books that the big stores won't even bother carrying, or they'll carry in such small quantities.
Well, the wonderful thing about independent bookstores is we're independent. We're all different. We have sizes and we make choices which promulgate a different group of books, and that's really important to the industry.
Well, has the decrease in competition with the closing of so many independent bookstores in the city ended up helping the ones that have survived?
I think that's fair to say.
Yeah, I believe so. You know, I think the high cost of gas a year and a half ago.
We're a rare breed now.
Kept people from traveling to get books, and now I think it's sort of encouraged people to buy local, and that whole movement is helping us.
Jonathan, were the problems that Borders faced similar to the problems that independent bookstores faced? Because it was, even though it's huge, it was still not as big as the other stores, and now it's also, as I understand it, facing all sorts of competition from Costco and Target and
right.
places that
right.
that aren't really traditionally bookstores.
Yeah, you have the whole Walmart phenomenon too. All these huge mega retail operations will sell books as well as other products, obviously, and they threaten the whole foundation of Borders and Barnes and Noble. But I think in Borders' case, it was different because they have so many brick and mortar shops all over the city and all over the country that with real estate prices what they were. And considering the economy the way it is, the biggest problem that a Borders is going to face naturally is going to be the economy. Forget competition, just staying in business and making money and making a profit.
So overexpansion is one of the miscalculations that's hurt them?
I don't know if it's a miscalculation, but it definitely has hurt them because I don't think anybody saw the economy falling off a cliff this way and takes no prisoners. It doesn't matter what business you're in. Everyone's suffering.
But these Borders, Barnes & Noble, they haven't just focused on books. They sell music.
Sure.
They sell all sorts of
magazines,
tchotchkes,
yeah.
And they have cafes. Mm. That hasn't helped them?
I don't think it's helped at all. I can't speak authoritatively from a Borders management point of view, but looking at it as a customer, I don't see those cafes selling, T-bone steaks and automobiles. They sell, coffee for a dollar or two, and I can't imagine how much coffee they're going to sell as opposed to a Starbucks. And like I said before, anything in the printed word, newspapers, magazines, books, are all having very difficult times.
Have either of you, Chris or Henry, been tempted to have a little coffee business on the side?
I've thought about it as a nice idea, but we never had the space. I think it's nice in the right place.
Because it gets people to stay longer, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, and it is nice to go into a bookstore and see. In a lot of areas, I always think of a Barnes & Noble in New York City as competition, but there's a lot of areas of the nation which are very well served by a big box chain bookstore with a cafe, and it's a wonderful, what they call third space, that they've created, and I think that's something that the industry's done very well. I don't see them going away at any point soon.
Yeah, I was down in Washington recently. I went to Kramer's bookstore down there, and they have a huge business with their cafe. And it's not just coffee. They sell all kinds of food there, and people hang out there for a long time. And it's a very nice atmosphere down there.
But the suggestion you're making, Chris, is that the big stores like Barnes & Noble actually are good for the book business. It's just not good for the independent bookseller who has to compete with them.
I think that the retail dynamics are such that the enormous chains and distribution, that part of the distribution chain is wonderful to get advances out across the nation of enormous things like Dan Brown, Malcolm Gladwell, etc. But giving birth to a million different books, a million different ideas, keeping democracy alive happens in a million small petri dishes, which are all the independent booksellers promulgating different kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. Sid Arthur on the Upper West Side left a comment on a show page. He says he lives on the Upper West Side in the bookstore near Book Culture called the Morningside Bookshop is unfortunately closing down.
It is.
Again, because even within this community of independent booksellers, there are some that are more likely to survive than others?
Yes, yes. There's no question. I mean, that.
Do you ever wonder why you made it and the guy down the block didn't?
Well, we're in a very fortunate situation, Leonard. We own the two buildings we have the store in, one of which we bought in 1984, the other we bought in 1996, back when they were somewhat reasonably priced.
So you're not going to gouge yourself in rent?
No. Not until
I retire. It would be an interesting thing to bring yourself to court saying, well, he's not paying his rent.
Yeah, so that's helped tremendously, and I don't think we'd be there had we not bought them.
Mm-hmm. But real estate's the key to the retail picture. you know, what piece
for
you
restaurants
have.
As well, for everything, clothing stores
yeah, right.
these days.
Yeah. The piece of retail you have, its location, and so forth, and financing. Mm-hmm. Can you buy what you need to sell?
Is this true all around the country, or is Absolutely. New York a unique situation?
Well, we're unique because we're here, because it's so expensive and so prominent for the nation, but I think it's true everywhere, yeah.
My guests are Jonathan Friedman, media columnist for MarketWatch, Chris Dublin, who is the owner and founder of Book Culture, and Henry Zook, who is the co-owner of Book Court. And we will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. We're back with Jonathan Friedman, a media columnist for MarketWatch, Chris Dublin, the owner and founder of Book Culture and a founding member and board member of the Independent Booksellers of New York City, and Henry Zook, co-owner of Book Court in Brooklyn. Henry, is it I would assume that for an independent bookstore, the developing a loyal customer base is the key. Because when I go into one of the big shops, there's a good chance that the person who I talk to will have no idea what I'm talking about if I'm looking for some special kind of book.
Yes, exactly.
This is like wine or
yeah,
something?
Yeah, I mean, they're your bread and butter, your local customers. And, you know, they're the people that will become your day-to-day clients and customers and support you through good and bad, up and down. So it's probably the largest factor in deciding which books to carry is what do they want to read?
And does it matter that there are other people out there who are offering these same books at much lower prices?
For some people, it does. Some people, it does. You know, it's. I think the younger people are a little more inclined to shop that way, I think, students and people like that.
And that's what you have to deal with, Chris, students. So I assume that what you have going for you is that a major part of your sales is in texts and required reading.
It is. We sell about half of our books that way. And I think I've just begun to sense that there's a little bit of a change in the way students are buying books, and they're starting to recognize that there are some savings buying books online, but it's actually easier to come over to us or to go to the college chain store and buy all my stuff at once. There's not that much savings involved.
I think one of the ironies of this business is that when I was in college, I used to go to Barnes & Noble on Fifth Avenue, was it, to buy used textbooks. That's how they got so big, and now that's the sort of thing, a specialty thing that they don't even do anymore.
The text. I think they still actually do them at that location in the back. And that's a wonderful thing.
But they changed the way books are sold.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They made it popular to be a customer. Instead of just going and buying a book, you can browse like a record store in the old days. And it's kind of
you
a phenomenon.
You can use the bathrooms and not buy a book.
Absolutely. And
Henry's got the best bathroom in Brooklyn.
I'll remember that if I'm in need.
I was curious about something. I asked these fellow guests. And the music business is very hard to break a new talent because the radio stations have gone away for the most part. How about for a new author? Is it all word of mouth or are there other ways?
Well, it depends. It depends how big the print is, what the publisher is doing for it. Someone who's not really recognized and first-time author, there's a fair amount of legwork involved. We have authors coming in all the time to sign their copies and bring us posters and do what they can.
There's huge numbers of new authors that have been made by independent booksellers, and that's something that I think everybody in the industry recognizes. That's one of the real challenges to seeing a declining number of independent. It's like having independent radio stations disappear. You can't bring up a new band.
Well, what authors have been helped by independent booksellers?
Oh, I think there's tons of them.
Elegance of the Hedgehog, for instance, which is very popular right now.
By a local, that's actually a local publisher that's publishing books in translation. But there's tons of books which have been broken out by, and you can see enormous numbers of sales compared to chain stores at the beginning of a book's life, and then they become popular, and then they come back to
I was thinking like High Fidelity by Dick Hornby was one of those cases where it came out of nowhere, it seemed. Everyone was talking about it after he appeared in various stores and it became a
and explosion. On radio shows like this, by the way.
Yes, of course.
Because I know that the publishers see this show, Charlie Rose.
Absolutely.
Fresh Air, Terry Gross, and and all those local shows as a major part of their business plan.
They are. Yeah. I think one thing that's interesting is that the books are made and authors are made through all these channels, and lots of them are printed. Some portion of new titles are made by independent bookstores. What's interesting is that a huge portion of our customers and Henry's customers also buy their books online. You probably bought books online at Amazon or Barnes & Noble and also love to go into your independent bookstore. What's interesting is that the independent bookstores and our health is been so on the decline that a minimum amount of new thinking about where you buy your books can really make a huge difference. Our percentage is somewhere in the 7% range. Hmm. So if we get back another 3%, you know, we'll be doing 50% better.
So did you form the IBNYC as a way of saying we have to do something, we have to group together to survive?
Yes, and specifically to provide a platform to get the message out that we're worth supporting, and we're going to have a big event in November, which is from November 15th to 21st, a bookstore week to get people to recognize independent bookstores and do their shopping there.
Henry, can you imagine a shop like Book Court surviving in a city other than New York?
I wouldn't want to try it.
I mean, there are a few. Powell's has done very well.
Of course, Powell's, Tattered Cover. There are plenty of great stores around the country. New York is, you know, I feel it's just a wonderful place to be with a bookstore.
What about publishers, John? Publishers have been struggling as well, but they don't seem, at least from my viewpoint, to be giving much encouragement to the independent bookstores.
No, and publishers themselves are doing having a very hard time. A lot of corporations which own publishers are trying to shop them, but it's very tough these days to sell any kind of business. Again, with the printed word, for better or worse, the printed word is looking like an endangered species. That's not fair, and it's not good, and it's not right, but it's just the way it is. And a lot of these book companies, book publishers, are feeling the brunt of it, too.
Are they doing things to help you guys, Chris? You talked about Amazon being able to sell things at a price lower than you can buy it. But are they offering you discounts?
Well, we have a sufficient discount. And the book industry is, I think, especially with leaders like Random House, which has been absolutely terrific in helping independent booksellers, has the group staff members that are dedicated to helping us survive and selling to us and so forth. I think they do a terrific job.
Yeah, and the communities where we're in, people, you know, really enjoy having us there and want to keep us.
It's an industry that you can return your merchandise to the publisher if you can't sell it. I mean, how good is that?
And then they wind up on remainder
and you can
tables
sell it
somewhere
again,
down
cheaper.
The line.
Yeah. Sure.
Now, I'd assume that your bookstores are not affected much by the Oprah factor, or are they?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Oprah and Imus really did change the business to some degree, didn't they?
Yes.
Yeah. No, well, I guess just in the few items that they sell.
Well, she started her book club, you know, years ago.
Right.
Which was a huge success.
Has anybody tracked the Oprah factor?
It's huge. There's no reason to track it. It's definitely a major factor. I mentioned also on the radio is big too. But Oprah, if she gives a book her stamp of approval, it's going to be a bestseller because every one of her customers is going to hear about it, and a lot of them who have enough money and time will go out and buy it. So Oprah is like the sun over all the stars in the media world. She's the biggest thing in the media world.
And she hasn't been hurt by the fact that she supported any number of books that turned out to be based on, what words do I
fiction.
Want to use?
Yeah.
Supposedly nonfiction books that turned out to be fiction.
They're bad for image, but not really for her business. I mean, people kind of forgave her for that. They still, it wasn't really her fault in a way.
Has that hurt you? Do people come in and say,
I don't think it's hurt at all.
I bought James Frey's book. I want my money back.
Nobody ever said that to me. But she's causing a lot of people who are watching TV to get up and go read a book.
It's
what
great.
More could you ask
it's
for?
Great, yeah.
They say Obama's the new Oprah because any book he mentions is, or even that somebody might hand him, in the case of Open Veins of Latin America, for example, becomes a book that people want to buy and they start selling it.
Didn't Clinton do that with Walter Mosley also when he was president?
Yes.
He liked Walter
Mosley.
And nobody's buying any of those books on Kindle or nearly. They're going into a bookshop and they're buying the book. And this is still an industry which is selling, $24 billion worth of books. This
Chris,
is not an industry.
Do you see it happening in the future? Do you see Kindle coming like a brush fire coming
I'm
down
betting
the road?
My whole life on it.
Well, when I was first in the business in 1981 in publishing, there were about 45,000 books published a year, and now they're close to 300,000, I think. So, and the planet's becoming more populated, and I think there are many more readers out there.
Well, you must be heartened by the fact that the president reads good books. He just said he's reading Netherland by Joseph O'Neill, which is a terrific book.
Yeah, which is great.
And now suddenly the book is being rushed into paperback. It might not have been given such a big printing.
Yeah, that's true. And also the paperback, I believe, is pushed up quite a bit. And that's happening more and more. Publishers are, if something's... something comes into the news or something, publishers are no longer waiting a year necessarily to publish a paperback.
I have a question along those lines. Bernie Madoff, of course, is in the news like crazy, and there are 7 or 8 books now under contract about Madoff's life and Madoff's misdeeds. Do you see all those books doing well, or will it be kind of a survival of the fittest kind of quality there?
We're not doing particularly well with them. Certainly we're selling some. The things we're selling related to that are The Great Crash of 1929 by John Kenneth Galbraith, things like that.
So the book that came out on Bear Stearns that got such great reviews, that still doesn't sell all
Kate
that
Kelly's
well?
Kate Kelly's book, yeah.
Oh, no.
No, but the Kate Kelly's book hasn't come out yet. She probably is on the verge of...
No, we've done very well with House of Cards. In fact, we had the author in the store 2 weeks ago signing, and it's done extremely well.
You know, Len, I was here, my book is House of Cards also, by Rick Express. I was here in your show in 1992 talking about a House of Cards book a long time ago.
A different House of Cards.
Yes.
Well, it's a good title. I'm writing a book called War and Peace. are you concerned about the ill health of the publishers? Do you talk to them about what's going on?
I think, in my mind, a lot of the problem is that a lot of the larger conglomerate publishers have been really chasing money more than they have been books, and I think that's a big mistake, and they've been overpaying for authors just to keep them and to get a book, and, you know, I think that's being rectified now.
What about the small presses? Do they do
some
well?
Some of them are doing a terrific job, like this Europa Publications.
Yeah.
And
there are many wonderful small presses.
Yeah, people are finding a niche which is not... so expensive that they need to have all kinds of expensive infrastructure and offices, and they're doing really well.
Are you people also selling the other stuff, the DVDs, the CDs, the gift items, the greeting cards, and whatever else that the
big
stores?
We sell a small number of postcards and greeting cards, but none of the, no music or DVDs at all.
Yeah, we do the same. No DVDs or CDs.
I don't think
that. Well, of course, that business is dying is even quicker than the book business.
Yeah, books on tape apparently are. Yeah, that's what I keep hearing.
What that
is? They're diminishing. You know, the publishers aren't really pushing them the way they were, books on tape.
Do you think that bookstores, Jonathan, are more vulnerable to economic shifts because books aren't a necessity like food or gas?
Possibly, but I think people love books. People love to buy books and own books and have books. So I think there's a large segment of people who have money and time and will want to buy books, but it may be more vulnerable because it's not like food and clothing, unfortunately. I guess fortunately, it's not the necessity. But I think people's love of books will always keep the business sustained as well.
Well, it's been my experience that if you talk to people in the newspaper business, let's say, privately, they'll talk about how depressed they are about the current state of the newspaper business. And then they come on the air and they say, oh, everything's going to be okay. Mm. And I wonder if we haven't had a similar kind of conversation here.
Well, I mean, we're not, you know, books aren't really dependent upon advertising to be published, you know. So there's a different economic principle working. But it's certainly, the formula has certainly gotten messed up quite a bit in the last couple of years. But I think books are here for a long, long time.
I do, too. I think the next shift is going to be one that affects the chains and the top end of expenses at publishing houses more than little bookstores like ours.
And there's so much information today, and people are just flooded with information, and books are one of those things that you can go to.
I just wonder about the Kindle. The Kindle, people who have it swear by it, and they love it, and anything that popular, I think, could be successful.
Well, as my son said the other day, though, how do you go to an autograph party and have it signed?
That's true.
On the other hand, if you are going on vacation and you want to bring a whole bunch of books with you, the Kindle is ideal because it weighs the same whether you're bringing 20 books or 2 books.
Sure.
True.
Plus, it's got the buzz, whatever that means. It's got a buzz.
If I came into your shops and I had a Kindle, can you take care of me?
No. I don't see that as something that's going to happen.
There are other electronic book forms.
Sony Reader.
Yeah, you don't do any of that.
No, we don't. Not at this point in time. It may come to that.
People have suggested a kiosk where you can walk into a bookstore, but I think it's probably unlikely that we'd be the best place to do it.
And then Jason Epstein had this idea years ago of having, at least in larger stores, having a printing press with some kind of special access, I don't remember how it worked, and books that you might not carry in stock could be printed up on the spot, and you could, and it would bind it and everything. And
those are working in some places.
Print on demand. It's pretty popular with publishers. You know, right now they're doing books specifically for orders.
Well, it expands the catalog in any bookstore.
Potentially,
yes.
Speaking of expanding that catalog, you know, Google is working on expanding the catalog to have every book that was ever published. But what's interesting in relation to independent bookstores and our importance is what they do with their database of books. There's recently a very interesting story in the media about how they covered up the availability of a huge number of books, made them impossible to find based on their content. This is something that couldn't happen with a very diverse group of booksellers.
Dan Cullens with the American Bookseller Association called in to say he can think of four books that independent booksellers help promote.
Way to go,
Water
Dan.
For Elephants, The Kite Runner, The Glass Castle, and Reading Lolita in Tehran.
There you go. A big study was actually done, I think, on the Elephants book, and they have a wonderful group of data to support it.
Well, one of the things that you get in a local bookstore is a relationship with the people there, and I'm sure you hire people who are knowledgeable as well. And so many of those books sell because of recommendations.
Absolutely.
What's good to read? Oh, well, a lot of people are buying Water for Elephants right now.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's a big part of it, and that makes all the difference, I think.
And it's what you put there. You know, most of the chain stores in any industry, the space is bought and paid for, and that's how the books show up there.
Well, John, I get the feeling that you are more of a believer in Kindle than the other guys here, but otherwise...
I'm afraid so.
He writes for the web.
That's true. I'm loyal to the web, too. That's true.
Does anyone ever print out your articles?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, my parents.
To me, I'm still so old-fashioned. When I find something on the web that's interesting, I print it out and use up the paper anyway. Jonathan Friedman, media columnist for MarketWatch. Chris Doblin, owner and founder of Book Culture and the founding... member and board member of the Independent Booksellers of New York City, and Henry Zook, co-owner of Book Court in Brooklyn. Book Court located on Court Street?
On Court Street in Cobble Hill, yes.
Thank you both, all three of you,
so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.